So this week, the double parsha, we have Parshas Acharei, Mos, and Kedoshim, which if you have the stone chumash, it begins on page 636. So the parsha begins with we'll start at the beginning of Ayidaber Hashem al Moshe Acharei Mos Shemei Bnei Aharon B'Karvasam L'Fnei Hashem B'Yamusu. Hashem spoke to Moshe after the death of Aaron's two sons when they approached before Hashem and they died. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Daber al Aaron Achicha, speak to Aaron your brother. Val Yavo B'Chol Eichel HaKodesh, he shall not come at all times into the sanctuary. He based up a rochus within the curtain. In front of the cover that's upon the ark, so that he shall not die. Ki be'anon eroa al hakaporis, for in a cloud will I appear upon the ark cover. So this pasuk is saying that Aaron and actually, nobody else either may enter into the Hebrew of Parakas with the sanctuary within the curtain, which is behind what we call the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, the place that's behind the curtain where the Ark, the Aron is. And the Pasuk says, continues, keep on a relic of Parakas, for in a cloud will I appear upon the Ark cover. And the rest of this section deals with the Yom Kippur service, and what the pasuk is actually saying, according is that in general, Aaron and everyone else is not allowed to enter the Holy of Holies. It only should be entered on Yom Kippur. Now, the way the pasuk expresses it is with these words, "Kiba onan eroa al hakaporis," we're in a cloud will I appear upon the ark cover. So Rashi explains that the simple plain meaning of the text is that "Kiba onan eroa," Rashi says, "Ki tamid ani nira sham," that I am constantly my presence is constantly visible, manifest there, in Amud Anani, with my clouds. So the way the art school translates, brings the Rashi here. It says, the simple meaning of the verse is, that no one may enter the inner sanctuary because God's glory is manifested in the cloud of glory that hovers over the art. So the cloud that it's referring to is Hashem's cloud of glory. And the pasuk is saying that the reason why one may not enter the sanctuary in general most of the time is because Hashem says, my presence is manifest in a cloud. That, Rashi says, is true, that that's the plain meaning of the text. However, there's another meaning, a perhaps deeper meaning of this text, where the pasuk is saying that this part of the pasuk is actually saying not only the reason why one may not enter the Holy of Holies in general, but it's also alluding to when or why or how the Aaron or the Kohen Gadol is allowed to enter. Meaning it's alluding to the Yom Kippur service. And it's saying, Kiba Anon Eira, like the first means the cloud. What cloud is it referring to? It's referring to the cloud of the Ketores, the cloud of the incense that the Kohen Gadol brought on Yom Kippur when he went into the Holy of Holies. So reading the passage that way would be saying that Aaron should not enter the Holy of Holies except the Anon, except with that cloud of incense. That's when he may appear in the Holy of Holies. So already at this point, can ask a question. If we keep on reading the section here, will find that Aaron went into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippur a number of times, especially if we read through this whole section, especially with the Rashi and the interpretations of our sages. We know, and we actually spend quite a bit of time on the Yom Kippur service by davening, going through all of this, that the Kohen Gadol went into the Holy of Holies a number of times, multiple times on Yom Kippur. Two other times had to do with the incense, one when he brought in the incense and one when he brought out the incense. But there were other times that he went in and had nothing to do with the incense. He went into, and the pasuk itself says later, he brought in the, he sprinkled the blood of the bull or whatever, and the sawyer and the goat. There were different things that he did inside the Holy of Holies that had nothing to do with the incense. So then if that's the case, why is the Torah singling out? Why is the Torah singling out the incense as being the time that it's appropriate, or the way that it's appropriate for Aaron to go into the Holy of Holies? That's one question. Another question, another issue I want to discuss is as follows. They actually, if you have the Oscar Chumash, they actually allude to this over here, that this pasuk, and especially this idea of the Aaron going on Yom Kippur with the incense, was actually a very, very hotly debated issue during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, especially during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, as to how this service of the incense on Yom Kippur should be carried out. So the we know that at that time, during the somewhere in the middle of this of the time of the second sanctuary, there arose a sect called the Tzedukim or the Tzedokim, and there was a similar sect called the Baisusim. The Sadducees, I think they're called in English, and there were many points in Jewish practice that were debated between the Tzedokim, between the followers of that of the ideology of the Tzedokim, and the what was also called the Prushim, or what we call the Chachamim, the sages who had carried the oral tradition, and they had many debates. And one of the debates that they had centered around the service of the incense on Yom Kippur. And the debate was as follows. Well, the basic, just a crash course in a very basic understanding of what the service of incense was. Basically, there was ketores, there was certain spices, certain kinds of species of spices that were actually brought every day on the Mizbeach, but they were also brought on Yom Kippur. There were spices, and then there were coals. And the Kohen Gadol had, in one hand he had a pan of coals, and the other hand he had the spices, and then he took the spices and he put them on the coals, and the spices burned, and that's what made this cloud of smoke, this sweet-smelling cloud of smoke, and that was the service of the incense. So the Tzedokim said that the Kohen Gadol first should put the incense on the coals, burn the incense, and then enter the Holy of Holies. He should burn the incense. He should enter into the Holy of Holies with the incense already burning. That's what the Tzedokim said. That's how they read this pasuk. It seems ki be'anan, after you have after there was a cloud of incense, a royal kaparis, that's when he should go in to the place of the Holy of Holies. However, the Chachamim, the sages, according to the oral tradition, said that's not correct, and it must be done the other way. The Kohen Gadol enters the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he enters into the inner sanctuary, and only then does he put the incense onto the coals and burn the incense. He does the burning itself in the inner sanctuary. That was the debate between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim. So, first of all, what was that? what's the significance of that whole thing? What's the difference? They do it this way, they do it that way. Why is that so important? Why is that something that makes such a difference? That's, I guess, one question. But if you look into it a little bit further, the whole thing is a little bit strange, because we know that in general, the philosophy of the Tzedokim was that they were literalists. They read the text. They didn't believe in oral tradition. They felt you read the Torah and you just do what it says. Which I don't know exactly how they were able to do that, but that seems to be pretty impossible. But that's a question for a different time. But the basic idea seems to be that the Tzedokim did not follow an oral tradition. They just took the text at face value. That's, in general, the philosophy of the Tzedokim. The problem is that if we read the text here, it seems like it's the Tzedokim or the ones that are not reading literally. Because if we go a little bit later and we read the part that talks about the Ketores, let's read the text and judge for ourselves. If you have the Chumash, it's on page 640, it's chapter 16, verse 12. And this is where it's if you have it, if you don't have a Chumash, you'll have to just listen to me read it. But this is the way it reads, where it tells us the service. It describes the service of the Ketores and Yom Kippur. It says, "V'lokach b'lo hamach togach le'esh. He shall take a shovel full of fiery coals. Me'al mizbeach mufnei Hashem, from the top of the altar." And his cupped hands full of finely ground incense spices. Okay? So this is what I said before. He has a shovel full of fiery coals, and he has a handful of spices. Okay? Then the pasuk continues. Vehevi mi beis laparoches. And bring it behind within the curtain. And then the next pasuk says, the Nazan is like a Torah, Allah Eish, with me Hashem. He shall place the incense upon the fire before Hashem. You hear that? Well, I'll read it again. It says the Kohen should take the fiery coals in one hand. I'm paraphrasing it now, but this is the order. He takes the fiery coals in one hand, the incense in the other hand, bring it behind the curtain, and place the incense upon the fire before Hashem. So what does he do first? Does he put it on the coals first, or does he bring it behind the curtain first? The pasuk says clearly, he should take the two things, bring them behind the curtain, and then place the incense upon the fire before Hashem. So what's the matter with the Tzedokim? They don't know how to read? It's one thing if the Tzedokim want to read things literally, and I don't believe the oral tradition. But if you read the Tzedokim, it doesn't read the way the Tzedokim say it. It reads the way the Chachamim say it. This would seem to be the exact opposite of what the Tzedokim usually do. Why would the Tzedokim read it that way? And then it seems very strange. Very not consistent with the Tzedukim's own philosophy of interpretation. That's the second question. Okay, maybe that's enough questions already for today. I'll just repeat the two questions briefly, and they both have to do with this with the debate between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim. First of all, what's the difference? Which one you do first? Bringing the coals in, and then burning it, like the Chachamim say, or first burning and then bringing it in. And second of all, why would the Tzedukim read the pasuk the wrong way, when normally they're the ones who read it literally and don't rely on any tradition that would seem to contradict the simple reading? And here, it seems like that's what they themselves are doing. So the truth is that the question of why the Tzedukim felt this way, there's a section in the Jerusalem Talmud, the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi reports that the Tzedukim made a logical argument in support for their approach. Maybe they weren't coming from reading, but in this case, they were coming from logic. And the logical argument they said was, they said that if you're going to prepare food for a king and serve it to the king, do you prepare the food in front of the king? Because that's not respectful. It's not respectful to make the cook to bring your grill into the king's dining room and start grilling the food and right in front of the king. No, you prepare the food in the kitchen and then you go to the king's dining room and you bring the food. So he says that. So say the Tzedukim, the same concept is over here. If what we're trying to do in our service of Hashem is have the sweet smelling incense, so prepare it outside. You don't prepare it in the inner sanctum. You prepare it outside and then you bring it in. Why? It doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem respectful to come in with the unprepared stuff and then prepare it right when you're ready in front of the king, so to speak. That was the Tzedukim's argument. So it seems to be a strong argument. How do we understand why the Tzedukim, why do we say that the Tzedukim are wrong? It would seem that, the Tzedukim seems to indicate the Tzedukim are wrong, but so logically, it would seem that the Tzedukim should be right. So how do we understand that? It's really another question that we can ask. So in order to start understanding these things, I want to, I'll just say, mention that the basic concept that I got here is something that I heard on a recording from a great man who I learned some things from over the years. He's not someone I'm very close with. His name is Rabbi Moshe Wolfson. He's the Mashkiach, the spiritual advisor, and he's one of the major yeshivas in New York, Yeshiva Torah V'Das. He's a senior scholar. And this is a talk that he gave about Yom Kippur. I may have shared this idea once, 1 year before Yom Kippur, in this venue. I don't remember if some of you may have heard this from me before. But anyway, the basic idea I got from him, although I'm going to try to expound on it a little bit and hopefully add something that's worthwhile to add to it also. So let's pose the following question. We know that we have we the tradition that the Torah tradition that we have handed down to us, as opposed to the Tzedukim who were non-believers in this, but the tradition that we have is that the Torah has two components to it. There's the Torah Shebiktav, there's the written Torah, and there's the Torah Shebaalpeh, and there's the oral tradition. And the oral tradition, hello?
We can hear you.
You can hear me, but you can't see me?
I can see you.
Oh, good. Okay. So I don't see anybody else, but as long as everyone can see me, that's good. Thank you for answering. It's okay. I'll have to picture you all there. For some reason, my screen, I lost the video of being able to see you, but that's fine. If you can hear me and see me, that's great. So what was I saying? So the Torah about Ben. Now, certain things were certain information was given to us in the Torah Shabbat in the written law, and other information was given to us in the Torah Shabbat Peh, in the oral law. And so it always brings up the question, why are certain things written and certain other things we only know orally? And it's often difficult or it's not impossible for us to understand why some things were given orally and some things that were written, or they seem to be impossible for us to understand. However, our great teachers have sometimes offered explanations as to which information is given to us in a written way and which is given us in an oral way. I once mentioned this, that the B'nai Yitzchak, the great Hasidic sage who lived about 200 years ago, who was an ancestor of mine, to illustrate, he once said that on Rosh Hashanah, we have two different types of blasts of sounds for the shofar. We have the tekiah, which is a straight, which is a longer straight blast, and then we have the teruah, which is a broken blast. Now, we do both of them, and they're both from the Torah. However, if you look in the Torah when it describes the day of Rosh Hashanah, in the written Torah, it only says teruah. It doesn't say anything in the written Torah about tekiah. The broken blast is mentioned. The tekiah we know from Torah Shabbat Peh. We know it from the oral tradition. We know it from the interpretations of the sages, which is part of the oral tradition. So the Beis Sofer explains that there's a reason why the tekiah was not given in a written way, only an oral way, whereas the teruah was written. And he says the following. He says that, and this is the basic idea which I'm gonna try to share with you now. There's a difference between the written or the oral Torah. The written Torah is something that was given, dictated directly from Hashem. Every word in there was given directly from Hashem. There was no human being involved in the words of the Torah or in the words of the Torah Shabbat, of the written Torah. Torah Shabbat Peh is something of a partnership, so to speak. Hashem gave the Torah to the sages to be the guardians of it, to transmit it, to interpret it according to the rules of the interpretation that were handed down. So it's something that the human being, that the sages of the Torah, have a role to play in it as well, a crucial role, a partnership in it, so to speak, as well. And that's the oral tradition. And so he says that Rosh Hashanah, there's one other piece over here. The tekiah, Nachmanides says that the tekiah, the sound, the straight sound, represents chesed or rachamim, represents kindness or mercy. The broken sound represents din, that represents harsh justice. So, and now the sages tell us, the Medrash tells us that on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem sits on the seat of justice, and then when the Jewish people blow the shofar, then Hashem gets up in the seat of justice and goes on the seat of mercy. So what is that? So therefore, says the Bnei Sassan, now we understand very well that in the written Torah, it tells us Rosh Hashanah is a day of teruah, is a day of broken standard, day of judgment. Why? Because the written Torah is the Torah of Hashem, the Torah of Hashem without human intervention, so to speak. And what Hashem does before the human intervention on Rosh Hashanah is teruah. So the teruah is a Torah Shebiksav type of concept. It's the concept of what Hashem does without human intervention. Therefore, it's in the written Torah. Whereas tekiah, which is the rachamim, which is the mercy comes from what we do. If we do what we're supposed to do on Rosh Hashanah, so then Hashem moves to the seat of mercy. Therefore, it's in Torah Shabbat Peh, because that's the part of the Torah that represents the human being's contribution to the world, to the Torah, and therefore to the world and to the spiritual dynamic of the world, and that's what the tekiah is. So, following that's what the Bnei Sofer says. So, this is a very, very important idea that we can use in many places. We try to figure out why certain things are written only in the written Torah, certain things are in the oral Torah, certain things are in the written Torah. Another example of this, which is a fascinating example, which I think corresponds to this too, is that there's another debate between the Chachamim, the sages, the Talmudic sages, those that believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, and the Tzedukim or the Baisusim, the ones who do not believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. That has to do with the date of the holiday of Shavuot. The Pasuk says, the Torah says that you count 49 days, and the 50th day is the holiday of Shavuot. When do you count 49 days from? So this is actually a Pasuk in next week's Parsha. It's on page 684 if you want to look. But the Pasuk says, you should count Mimacharas HaShabbos, from the day after, from the morrow of the rest day, according to Art School. What does that mean? The day after the Shabbos. So the Tzedukim says that you start counting on Sunday, the day after Shabbos, Mimachlis HaShabbos. And therefore you count 49 days from Sunday, and Shavuos is going to be always Shavuos is always going to be on a Sunday, according to that, because day one is going to be on Sunday, and therefore you're going to end up with Shavuos always going to be on a Sunday. However, we know this is not the way we do it. This is not what our tradition teaches, and this tradition teaches that Shabbos there doesn't refer to Shabbos, what we call the seventh day of the week, Shabbos, but Shabbos there actually refers to the first day of Pesach. So we start counting the Sfira from the day after the first day of Pesach. That's the day after Shabbos, and 49 days of Shavuos, and therefore it could come out on any, technically, theoretically, it can come out on any day of the week, because depending on when the Rosh Chodesh Nisan was, that's when Pesach is, and that could be depending on when they sight the new moon, and therefore it could be any day of the week. So here we have another debate between the Tzedukim and the Chachamim, that the Tzedukim or the Vaisusim say Shabbos means Shabbos. They're actually being literal about it, or more literal about it. And the Chachamim say Shabbos in this case refers to Yom Tov. So I was thinking that this also can go with the same idea that this, in other words, why does Shabbos in this case, why do we need the Torah Shabbat Peh? Why didn't the Torah write explicitly that it means Yom Tov? The Torah wrote it in a way that's ambiguous. And we need the Torah, and the Torah of Ksav is ambiguous. It's unclear. The Tzedukim made a mistake. It said it meant Shabbos, which means Sunday. The day after Shabbos, which is Sunday. So it's only in Torah about prayer that it's clarified that it means Yom Tov. So I was thinking that we can apply the same idea, which is that there's a difference. The difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov also corresponds to the difference between Torah of Ksav and Torah about prayer, because Shabbos is the seventh day of the week. Who made Shabbos into Shabbos? It was Hashem. Hashem created the world in 6 days. And the seventh day, like the Torah says at creation, he said, this is the seventh day of Shabbos. And by Yekadosh also, he made the Shabbos holy. And every seventh day since then is Shabbos, because Hashem made day seven into Shabbos. There's no human intervention involved in Shabbos at all. However, Yom Tov is something else. Yom Tov, Hashem gave the authority as to determining the month, which is Yom Tov. Yom Tov is dependent on the day of the month, and the authority of the month is dependent on the Jewish people. It's the partnership of the Jewish people with Hashem to determine the days of the month, and by extension, the Yom Tov. And therefore, it would make sense that when we have the word Shabbos to mean Yom Tov, that it would be Torah Shabbat Peh. That will explain that, because the oral Torah is that part of the Torah that represents the partnership between the human intervention together with Hashem, with Hashem's Torah to tell us what it means. And therefore, the Yom Tov is expressed in Torah Shabbat Peh. That's what I think you could possibly say to it. So now there's one other idea here that we need to introduce in order to get back to our question about the incense on Yom Kippur. That's the following. We know that we're in the leading up weeks to Shavuos. So there's a beautiful, a tremendously powerful and beautiful concept that has to do with the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai. And that is that the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai is expressed in terms of a marriage. It's a Rashi and Pashas Yisro says that when the Jewish people, Moshe took the Jewish people to greet Hashem, and it says Hashem went to greet them like a chosam that goes likras kala, like a groom goes to greet his bride. So there's an idea that there's an idea that the giving of the Torah wasn't merely Hashem imposing, so to speak, or Hashem decreeing, giving his decrees, his laws. Hashem's the lawgiver and is giving the law to the Jewish people. That's true. That aspect is 100% true, and it's a crucial part of the giving of the Torah. But there was something much more than that going on over there. There was the creation of something akin to a marriage. There was this bond, this tremendously close bond between Hashem and the Jewish people was being created at the giving of the Torah. Now, this idea of the bond between the Jewish people and Hashem at the giving of the Torah is particularly, and this is based on the words of the sages in the Gemara, but I think we can understand it, that it's particularly connected to the oral Torah, because the oral Torah is that part of the Torah that expresses the partnership, that expresses the bond coming together of the human intervention, the human contribution to the understanding of the Torah, which is the Torah being given over to human beings to safeguard it, to interpret it according to the human mind, and that creates what the Torah really is in this world, and it creates the expression of the will of Hashem in this world, and that's what the partnership of Hashem and the Jewish people is like a marriage, just like a husband and wife come together, and through their bond, through their unity, they create something entirely new. They create a new generation of people. They create a new reality of a family, of the husband and wife unit. That's what the oral Torah is. It's this creation of this unity between the Hashem and the Jewish people, so to speak, which expresses itself in the Torah, the oral Torah as understood and as transmitted by the sages of the Torah. And that's all part of all what happened at the giving of the Torah. Now, that being said, we can go back, we can take a step back and listen to the argument of the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim says that it doesn't make sense that to take the incense to take the incense and the coals separately and bring them into the inner sanctuary and first combine them over there, because it's not respectful for the king's chef, so to speak, to go into the king's dining room and grill his food right in front of the king. The king's chef should prepare it in the kitchen and then bring it all bring it completely prepared before the king. Yes, that's a very strong argument. Why is Tzedukim wrong? The answer is because it's true that in general, it's not respectful to prepare food in front of the king. However, there's an exception. There's one person who behind closed doors, not only can get away with preparing food in front of the king, but it's perfectly appropriate for that person to prepare the food in front of the king. Who's that person? That person is the queen, the king's wife. The relationship, the intimate relationship that exists between the king and the queen makes it perfectly appropriate that in the privacy of their own quarters, in a certain sense, maybe it's even more. It shows even more the bond. It brings out the bond between the king and the queen even more if the queen prepares the food in front of the king. And this is what the Tzedukim couldn't understand. We wanted to know why the Tzedukim seem to be out of character here, right? We're saying that they're interpreting the verse seemingly not the way it says it. Right? What are they doing that for? So the answer is, like Yerushalmi tells us, that the Tzedukim said it's impossible. It's impossible that this verse should mean what it says. because how can it be such a thing that you prepare the food for the king in front of the king? And it's true that understanding as impossible was a result of the Tzedukim's philosophy, not the philosophy of interpretation, but something much deeper than that. Their philosophy that there is no such thing as an oral tradition. To the Tzedukim, the Torah and the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people as expressed in the Torah is nothing more than a servant and a master. That's all it is. It's just that Hashem says, do it, and you do it. And the Hashem is the king, and we have to listen to him. And that's certainly true. But by the Tzedukim, it stopped there. That was the entirety of the relationship. And therefore, in the king-subject relationship, there's no room for preparing food in front of the king. The food has to be prepared outside. And therefore, the Tzedukim said the verse must mean that, even though it doesn't seem to read that way. But you have to read it that way because it doesn't make any sense. And this is where the Tzedukim got it wrong. Because we know that Chachamim knew, and we know that the relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people, yes, it's kings and subjects, but there's a whole entirely other dynamic, other dimension to the relationship. And that's the relationship of a husband and wife. And and that's expressed in the Torah Shabbat Peh. That's expressed in the oral tradition in this bond that we have with Hashem that surrounds the Torah, which is that we're the ones that are given, that are the guardians of understanding and explaining and transmitting Hashem's will to the world. And that's the husband-wife relationship that the Tzedukim had no understanding of, had no appreciation of. But once we have that appreciation, then the pasuk reads perfectly well. That, yes, that's what we do on Yom Kippur. That's the level on Yom Kippur that we reach this level of the intimacy of the husband-wife relationship with Hashem. And that's why it's perfectly fine and appropriate, and more than appropriate, it's a particular expression of the love and the bond and the closeness that we have with Hashem that we prepare the food, so to speak, right in front of him by bringing in the coals and the incense separately and combining it in the inner sanctum itself. And I think that this is something we can, just in closing, this is something to think about as we lead up to Shavuos. We're in the weeks of the Mimachos HaShabbos, from the day after we started counting the Sfira, the day after the Yom Tov, which is not like the Tzedukim of Isusim said, but we understand that it has to do with the Yom Tov, which is in and of itself is our partnership with Hashem in the creation of the calendar. And we're counting towards Shavuos, we're counting towards that great day of the giving of the Torah. And the excitement that we have is building up as we're counting the Sfiras Omer. The excitement is that is not only because we understand that Shavuos is a day that not only do we have the tremendous privilege of being the subjects of Hashem's kingdom, and of being the servants of Hashem, which in and of itself is a tremendous level, and it's a tremendous privilege. But it goes much further and deeper than that. That through the idea of the Torah Shabbat Peh, Hashem is bringing us in, bringing us close, with the closest kind of relationship of a husband and wife kind of relationship, to be his partner in bringing to fruition his will and his plan for the world. And that's the joy and the anticipation that we have coming up to Shavuos. Thank you very much. And
thank you, Rabbi.
Okay, thank you all, and have a wonderful evening.